Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Good to be with you today as we continue our discussion of health and wellness right here on Faith and Family. It's a good week. It's a beautiful day here in St. Louis, and we've got an important topic to talk about today. Beautiful day for it. So while it may not seem like the most uplifting topic, it's an important topic as we talk about anxiety and depression, as so many folks deal with that or have loved ones who deal with that. So it's an important topic we're going to discuss here in just a little bit. Before we get to that, I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for making sure that this show happens so that you can learn about all these important topics. So if you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, KFUO.org, and then go to the sponsor section, click on the Concordia University website or the logo there, and that'll take you to their website, and you can learn all about all they have to offer at Concordia University, Wisconsin. If you'd like to join the conversation today, if you have a question or a comment for our expert in studio today, you can give us a call or an email at 314-821-0850. Or outside of the St. Louis area, you can call us at 1-800-730-2727. Or you can email us your questions or comments. Send an email to family@kfuo.org. So anxiety and depression, we hear about it all the time, and it's certainly an important topic, and it really affects all ages. So joining us in the studio today, we have professional Cheryl Thompson from Lutheran Family and Children's Services. Welcome to the studio today, Cheryl.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And what is your role at LFCS?
Well, I am a licensed professional counselor. And with Lutheran Family and Children's Services, I work in the school-based counseling program.
So you work with children and families, really a kind of a broad spectrum of people, I would gather.
Yes, I work at a K-8 Lutheran school, so I work with all of those families with those ages.
And you've been doing some studying and really working in a specific area in the last couple of years. What is that you've been doing some, I guess, research in?
Well, I've done an intensive training with trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy with kids, primarily. There's been more of a focus on anxiety, depression, and also how trauma may bring about those symptoms in younger kids.
Which is an important topic, and one of the reasons we asked you to be here today, because quite often we think of anxiety and depression as just an adult issue, because adults are the ones who have a lot of stress and end up in those situations with anxiety and depression. But it really does affect across the spectrum of ages. So we'll get into that. We'll talk about the differences among adults and youth and children and what that means for them. We see commercials on TV all the time for medicines and things that refer to anxiety and depression. Let's look at maybe have a working definition of what these are. What is anxiety and depression? Are they two different things? How are they associated? What are they?
Okay. Yeah, when I think of anxiety and I see children struggling with that and also adults, I think about mainly their main symptom is worry and fear. And so that's affecting their thinking, it's affecting their body. Your heart might be racing as you think of, you know, you think yourself of things you're fearful about. But someone who's struggling with this more than typical, it will be affecting everyday life. So they have trouble. Anxiety can mean you have a fear of a certain event, or you have fear of heights, or just anxiety in general, day to day.
And so those fears, you know, some of us have unusual fears or common fears. You know, someone's afraid of clowns, someone's all kinds of different phobias, afraid of, like you said, afraid of heights and things like that. Mm-hmm. When does it become, when is it a something serious? When is it anxiety that's a problem?
Well, we usually become concerned if it is keeping someone from doing what they need to do. A student's job is to be going to school, young children, that's sort of their full-time activity. So if it's keeping them from going to school, or if it's keeping them from doing their best in their subjects at school. And with adults, if it's keeping you from going to work, if you're missing days. With kids, we see anxiety affects them maybe with stomach aches, body aches, headaches. And so we want to help them. They might need more skills to help them feel better and to get their full benefit out of life and be productive and be healthy.
So from a Lutheran worldview, we might say that fears or anxieties that really hinder or prevent us from living out the vocation that we've been given, things that really stand in the way, something that stands in the way of us being able to do what it appears we've been given to do, as you said, for a student to be a good student, to study, something that a fear or something that's standing in the way of them actually being able to study or to get their schoolwork done, to participate in classroom discussions and things like that, a fear that's preventing them from doing that.
Right, exactly.
Is anxiety associated with depression? Or what is depression?
So depression, as we look at that, I think about the feelings of sadness and loss of motivation and more... you might see a change in the way someone's behaving than they have in the past. And they're not as talkative, or they have trouble sleeping. There's a lot of things that affect depression. So, you know, we see these occurring together a lot. Maybe somebody with anxieties become, you know, they're not as comfortable being with their friends. And so they see them less and they become isolated. Mm-hmm. And then they might show signs of depression. But usually there's either, so it might be the anxiety causing depression, so that's more of your main problem, or it could be just depression that comes about. And
so they can go hand in hand. Anxiety can lead to depression.
Sure.
If it goes on for an extended amount of time, then
right.
it can lead to depression. So depression, as you said, was kind of a continued sadness or an extended sadness that, how is that different from just, my dog died, or I lost a loved one and I'm sad about that.
Right.
Even, you know, losing a loved one, sad for months, maybe a year. Mm-hmm. How is that different from what we're describing as depression here?
With grieving or loss of any kind and stress in general, we can certainly see a time frame of that. You know, it comes and goes, and you sometimes with grief you don't get over it totally.
Mm-hmm.
You learn to deal with that. And with depression, when you start to feel this sadness more days than not, when you look at sort of a month, say in 30 days, you're feeling this sadness 15 or more days out of that month. And even if it is grief, you want to try to find some help and support for that, and that you're having trouble yourself dealing with that you want to feel better. And sometimes it's with depression, it can be, we see both depression and anxiety run in families. It can be a biological base problem that gets triggered by environmental issues or loss of a loved one or stress. So it's a thought pattern that gets kind of stuck, and we have to help them move on.
And that was my next question, is what are there known causes? And you mentioned that there could be a genetic background or maybe a predisposition toward that, but
right.
environmental conditions can change that. So it could be any kind of environmental conditions. Are there other, you know, some things that are very clearly, are there things that are very clearly associated with anxiety or depression?
Well, when we think about anxiety, and if you do have a predisposition, or someone in your family who may have struggled with that, and so your brain In your experiences as you develop, and we all experience new challenges and stress, but you start to feel physically sick in certain instances, and this fear gets magnified. So it can be simple things as you change stages in life, when you begin school, when you go to college. So different life changes can bring about more stress than you've had in the past, and you notice these symptoms becoming overwhelming. We hear people say that a lot, becomes overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And then with depression also, usually we see depression more as we hear, as kids become adolescents, anxiety, and we see depression in young children also, but not as frequent as anxiety. And so depression, as you become a teenager, and you really need a lot of support mm-hmm. with your family system, just as much as when you were a toddler and beginning school at the first time. There's just a lot of new things going on. Your body's changing. So again, your thought patterns, your brain is really growing at that time also. And we want to make sure you're getting healthy, choosing healthy things to do and getting that support to grow.
You mentioned that the teen years are a time when your brain is growing and perhaps it sounds like maybe more susceptible to the stressors or the stress that leads to depression.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit more, like maybe an example?
Mm-hmm. Well, teens, sometimes they're changing schools at that time. You're going mm-hmm. from an elementary to a middle school, and
sure.
you have a lot more responsibilities. And you're meeting new people, and you're growing a lot physically. So it's maintaining a balance that gets tricky for them because they're all about their friends and their peers.
And problems that seem small or trite to us as adults can be hugely magnified when you're in those teen years, those adolescent years.
Yes.
What seems so silly
yes.
to us as adults when we look back on them, wow, that seemed really silly. But at the time, when you know, relationships with others can be a huge, mm-hmm. huge issue and really cause us to, as you said, get stuck on that thought, get stuck on that.
What? Yeah, I like to talk to parents about you know, they are forming closer relationships as they begin those adolescent years. And that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they're used to more group type of dynamics, you know, in the younger years where they get along with most people. And so as you,
until we
as
become
you
teens.
gain closer friends, then there's also that other dynamic of others that you don't get along with as well. And you have to get through those muddy waters sometimes, mm-hmm. and you feel alone, or you feel their identity is forming, so they're shaky anyway about their own mm-hmm. their own image, their own self-image, and that's where faith can be another good forming years for faith is during that time.
You mentioned that life changes can be those. Can be some of those big stress items, the big stressors that can lead to depression. So I could see in those teenage years how, like you said, changing classes, changing schools, changing groups of friends, families packing up and moving across the country, how that can create stress for the whole family. Not only do you have to change as a teenager, change schools and friends, but then you have all the stress at home too, because the rest of the family is going through this change as well. Any advice for families who have those stressors, you know, packing up and moving or just dealing with those teen mm-hmm. years? What advice for parents as they're dealing with their teens who are dealing with those stresses and potentially, you know, susceptible to anxiety and depression?
So families can benefit from a lot of communication with your teen. You may feel like they aren't listening. They're also maybe a little rebellious about a move or a change. But as long as you are open to keep talking, keep communicating, they will be listening to you. We've seen in studies that the parents are still the number one influence on the family and their children.
So. As much as teens deny it.
Yes.
And as much as a teen may pretend like they're not listening to their parents and all the outward signs, all the external stuff looks like maybe they're not listening. They really are, and they have the most influence. So listening.
And it's good to also listen, and also with anxiety and depression, if you're seeing some concerns, to try and help them develop one or two friendships, or because going into a new school and new classes can be overwhelming. So how can you help them reach out to a few people that help make them comfortable, and then they can handle the harder times?
So talking about those, talking with your teen about those relationships at home, asking them questions about who have you met at school? Not just have you met anybody, but who have you met, and who are those people that you talked to today? And what did you learn about them in the conversation that you had with them? Are those the types of things that a parent should ask?
Yes, sure. And again, it will take, maybe you have to ask, you have to have the right environment. So, you know, is that at the dinner table, or is that ask in a way that you're really genuinely interested in?
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes families with time issues have trouble finding the time to do that, but it is important.
And we're going to talk about that more on Thursday.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the importance of family meals. So by having those meals, having a meal together, it doesn't matter which meal, having a meal together,
right.
I'm sure that makes a difference and opens those lines to communication on a regular basis.
So one thing, you know, parents do get, they start to feel, if you see signs of an over-anxious, overly worried child or depression, that they feel it's something they've done wrong, or that really it's fine talking to your doctor, talking to school counselors to help and get some support if you're not sure how to talk to your teen about that.
I hadn't really thought of it from that perspective, from a parent's perspective. I'm just embarking on this new parent thing.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't really thought about that. Parents may be feeling responsible for how their teen is feeling, feeling responsible for the fact that their teen might be depressed, maybe because we had to move here because of my job. And so now it's all my fault that, you know, my teen is sad or is depressed. I hadn't really thought about that. So getting professional help, like you said, talking with a professional counselor, school counselor, can be a great resource to help families through those times. What about older adults? As I think about the older generation and being in that myself, you know, looking at approaching the sandwich generation, if you will, with having a young one on the way and parents who will be getting older down the road, dealing with anxiety and depression in older adults, recently making some visits with our Sunday school class to the retirement communities and nursing facilities and things like that to visit some of our older members and thinking that they probably deal with this too, maybe, you know, on a daily basis, not getting frequent visits or frequent visitors. How do you deal with, how do you address that topic of depression and anxiety in the older parts of our communities, our families, our churches?
Well, I think, in different settings, yeah, we do see that quite often with older adults as they retire. Maybe they didn't have a plan, or as you feel that you, certainly your vocation, as we talk about the vocation God's given you, that when that you're not doing that full time or over full time, some people do, then your identity is changing and you're not sure. And you feel as you lose some independence or some being challenged daily with with the vocation that you had, that you're not sure which direction to go into, and you feel unsure.
I used to call the shots. I used to be I used to drive myself here and there. I used to be the one who was telling people what to do, and now all of a sudden I feel like I'm the one being told what to do or what I can and can't do. I can imagine how disappointing that can be. What can family members do for someone in that situation? For, you know, if we have an older loved one in the family, what can we do to help them through the those difficult times, those difficult thoughts?
As health becomes a concern, we know even when people suffer heart attacks, depression often follows closely behind with that. You're feeling your mortality at some point, and it's a fear that's naturally there. So assuring them through their spiritual life and also families, you know, listening to them and taking that, you know, you have to maybe take a time to reestablish your connection with them more often. So communication again, you know, if you're busy with your own family, you might not have been visiting your parents as often, and maybe that's what they need. So it's kind of knowing what they need, or finding ways to give them the support. So again, a support is a big, big help, and helping them learn some skills that even if they don't feel like getting up in the morning, that they need to. So what's your schedule this week? You can ask your parents, what are you going to be doing? And what can I help with? Or, you know, it's a delicate dance because they are used to being independent and giving you the advice. So.
And it seems to me quite often, just our human nature is to focus in on ourselves, to think about me. Now, and it seems like that's quite often the case in depression is to focus in on me.
Yes.
In that situation, especially in a nursing home setting or something like that, you know, where someone has had to make this huge change and a lifestyle change for them, and they used to be the ones calling the shots. How can I encourage them to think about, you know, how can you help other people here in your community, in your nursing home, your retirement community, wherever, you know, what can you do to help somebody else here? You know, somebody's certainly got to be in a different, you know, a far worse situation than what you're in, right?
Yes. And to even get to know the other people there, and that you're helping by getting to know them and being part of that community.
Kind of like what we were talking about with our teens in high school, asking those same questions. Who did you get to know today? What do you know about them? It kind of comes around full circle, I guess, as well. We've got to go to a break here in just a little bit. Before we go to the break, I want to remind our listeners that if you would like to join the conversation, if you have a question or a comment for our professional counselor, Cheryl Thompson, here in the studio today, you can join the conversation at 314-821-0850 if you're here in the St. Louis area. Outside of the St. Louis area, you can call us toll-free at 1-800-730-2727, or you can email your questions. Send an email to family@kfuo.org. When we come back from the break, I want to talk more about, we've talked about some of the things we can do in response to symptoms of anxiety and depression. And obviously none of us, unless you're a licensed professional in that field, we shouldn't certainly be, you know, as I shouldn't be diagnosing anybody and saying that they have depression. But if we see signs of that, we should certainly respond by getting professional help. But when we come back from the break in just a little bit, I want to talk about ways that we can maybe prevent. Are there ways to prevent, preventative measures that we can take to maybe reduce our chances of dealing with anxiety and depression? I know that it's far more complex than I can grasp, but what is it? We've talked about some of the things that lead up to it. Are there things that we can do to reduce the chances for anxiety and depression in all ages, in teens, in older adults as well? So we'll get to that right after the break. And again, listeners, if you'd like to join the conversation, feel free to give us a call right here in the studio at 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727, or email us. Send an email to family@kfuo.org. Stick around for more Faith and Family right after this break.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The Medical Women's International Association in Seoul, South Korea, invited three doctors, Donna Harrison, Mary Davenport, and Martha Shuping, to present a workshop. They plan to share scientific and medical data on abortion's harm to women. After getting there, they discovered the workshop had been canceled, so a TV and newspaper press conference was arranged. In the middle of it, the Secretary General of the Women's Group burst into the room, demanding the press conference was over. This didn't set too well with the media, who simply moved to another location, and the women's message got out to thousands more than first intended. I personally know these three doctors, and their message is solid. Too bad those who don't have science on their side censor those who do.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org. And stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
What are the key Bible passages for rightly understanding the Lord's Supper? And does Jesus really mean, this is my body, this is my blood? Live Tuesday on Issues Etc. We'll continue our Christianity 101 series, talking with Pastor Stephen Parks about the Lord's Supper.
Issues Etc. Live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO.
Johann Sebastian Bach once called music an agreeable harmony for the honor of God and the permissible delight of the soul. We believe the great Lutheran composer got it right. That's why we're continuing the tradition of timeless classical music and sacred classics online at classic99.com. Check us out, the greatest music in the world, streaming 24/7 on classic99.com, a ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.
Our mission at KFUO is to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ to the nations. Today's internet capabilities give us the opportunity to do that. Listeners from all over the world can follow the ministry of KFUO via our website, Facebook, Wi-Fi radios, and smartphone apps. You can listen to KFUO Radio 24 hours a day, anywhere, with our on-demand programs and live audio streams. Worldwide KFUO at KFUO.org.
New Jersey now bans licensed professionals from using therapy to try to turn gay teenagers straight. Governor Chris Christie signed the law on Monday. Christie, who is Catholic, said in a signing statement that he agrees with experts from most major mental health and medical groups that say the therapy can pose critical health risk. But Arthur Goldberg of New Jersey-based Jonah, Jews Offering New Alternatives for Health, says Christie and lawmakers are misinformed.
Reparative therapy or gender-affirming counseling, whatever one wants to call it, does work.
6 years after it was gutted by an arsonist fire, the First United Methodist Church in downtown Burlington, Iowa, is expected to reopen any day. The man convicted of setting the 2007 blaze is serving a 35-year prison sentence. Military officials in Nigeria say intelligence reports that the head of the terror group Boko Haram may have died after being mortally wounded recently. The group, which opposes Western culture, regularly attacks Christians and Nigerian churches. I'm Norman Hall.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Great to be with you today as we are continuing our health and wellness discussion here on Faith and Family this week. Today we're talking about anxiety and depression, and we've talked about some of the signs of anxiety and depression and a little bit about how to respond to it. And I'd like to get into here in just a moment. I'd like to talk about if there are ways that things that we can do to avoid it, to prevent it, to delay it, whatever we can do as families to prevent it. If you would like to join the conversation today, you can do so by calling us here in the studio at area code 314-821-0850 or outside of the St. Louis area, 1-800-730-2727. Or you can send an email to family at KFUO.com. www.thefirstunitedmethodistchurch.org. So before the break, we talked about some of the signs of it, and in teens and older adults, quite often it seems like stress is really quite a factor that leads up to it. Life-changing, you know, life situations, changes in life that lead up to it. Are there things that we can do, Cheryl, to avoid it, to prevent it, if you will? I don't know if that's the best word to describe it, but what can we do for better mental health in general? We talked about communication before.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just talk a little bit about my history with the mental health field. I've been in the mental health field as a professional about 9 years, and during that time, been working in schools from K through 12 and also at the college level. So I think that those programs have been great to reduce stigma where services are available right in the schools. So also with, you know, so the earlier that we can see symptoms that someone's struggling, of course, then we can catch that early and give them skills, help them learn mm-hmm. skills to maintain that balance, because this is about balance and wellness. And that's always a good thing with any kind of illness, with any kind of a child with a learning disability, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. The earlier we can help them, the better outcomes are. And that's what we like to see. I don't know about cures. There's pro-covery. There's lots of words we use that, you know, it may be something they deal with a little more than their neighbor as far as being anxious over time. But we can certainly live a full life and be healthy. Mm-hmm. And that's our goal, I guess, with mental health. And so preventative things, we also like to say with balance, you know, physical exercise is certainly always good and gets the endorphins going in the brain as far as depression goes. Uh-huh. So if you can get those habits going at a young age, again, it's something that's just natural that you do, because maybe your vocation is something that isn't active physically.
More sedentary.
So you've got to make sure you make that effort if you're somebody who deals with a little bit of anxiety or depression, to make sure you get physical exercise. Mm-hmm. And that's a struggle for some with depression. Again, you have to do things that are outside of your box. But preventative, certainly eating well, sleeping well, doing all of those daily things that we all know we should be doing. And it's a daily act of wanting to be healthy, and it certainly prevents. And then also, because thought patterns are important, it's something unique to the mental health field to have to work at that also, that we do have some control when we work at it over our thinking patterns. And so that's mm-hmm. another skill that when practiced is very preventative.
And all of these good habits are hard to adopt once you're in a downward spiraling thinking pattern. It's hard to want to exercise. It's hard to want to eat right. well. It's hard to want to take care of yourself if you're in a thought pattern that mm-hmm. that's just bringing you down. So right. to establish these healthy patterns early on in life, make it, while they may not necessarily prevent signs of anxiety or depression, it sounds like they make it easier to deal with it yes. if it happens.
Right. And with anxiety, a lot of relaxation mm-hmm. we use with, when you think about anxiety, it when you deal with it a lot yourself, you don't realize that it's affecting you, your body physically. Your muscles are tense, and that over time, that plays a toll on your health. So
sure.
learning how to relax your muscles are things, again, that are preventative. And the younger that you can do those kind of things. Deep breathing mm-hmm. sounds simple. We talk about it a lot. But it we know it reduces your heart rate, and you know it calms your muscles, it relaxes things, and that reduces your anxiety.
So learning these things and teaching them to our children early on, learning to communicate well early on, it sounds like can really help. Really is preparing a young person to be prepared to deal with these stressors, the stress that they will later on in life, whether it be in their teen years or in their adult life, if they learn these things, these habits early on, good exercise, learning how to relax when stress comes your way.
Our counselors like to joke that their four and 5 year olds are talking about feelings at home, you know, because they've been taught about how to name your feeling and talk about it. So that's a joke among the professionals.
For 4 and 5 year olds to learn how to name their feelings, to talk about those. But that's beneficial. That will help them down the road so that they can identify those feelings. Even if it's just using those charts that have the smiley faces and sad faces on them to identify those. I want to go back to something we touched on earlier. You mentioned the word stigma, and I think that I remember as a child there being a stigma associated with any kind of mental health issues, whether it be anxiety or depression or anything. I remember there being a stigma associated with that. Oh, that person must be crazy because they had to go see, you know, a professional for that. Do you think we still, that stigma is still around as strong as it was, say, 30 years ago?
No, I don't think it's as strong. It is still there. But I, you know, my own children are adults. I have three adult children, I guess you call them. They're always my children. But, I think, you know, looking at my generation and then the younger generation raising children, they are they have closer relationships to their children than maybe past generations as far as communication that we're talking about, or in a different way, not that one's better than the other. So I see parents reaching out more for help when they can see a child struggling. And when they see that what they've done with their other children or what they've said isn't really comforting, this child is still, he or she's still struggling. So I see them reaching out more for help with teachers, with asking about the school counselor. But then as they get older, teens and high school age, there's still sometimes a reluctance to talk about it with peers or even adults. But once you do, then even as adults, young adults, talk with someone else about your struggles with anxiety or depression, then you find out other people have had similar issues, or they're open to listening and they're not being judgmental. And even in our faith communities, I think, you know, it's not a lack of faith that causes some of these things, just as I always relate to, you know, if you have diabetes or cancer. So sometimes it is still difficult to talk about, but we just work at it slowly.
And I think in the past, the stigma made it difficult for those who had serious, you know, depression or anxiety. It made it difficult for them to get help because of that stigma. They were afraid that if they even asked for help, or if they tried to find some resources, tried to find some assistance, that it was hard for them to make that connection because they were afraid of being labeled crazy.
Yes.
So moving away from that stigma certainly makes it helpful to get that support today.
And when you do have a diagnosis, it is important to see a mental health professional. They are the ones trained to help in that situation. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it is still difficult to reach out and get the proper care, but it is better, I think, yes.
What if you suspect that a loved one has is showing some signs of anxiety or depression. You know, say you suspect that your child is showing some signs of anxiety or depression. As a parent, what would be your next step?
Well, you can, as Lutheran Family and Children's Services is a statewide organization, so you can find out if they have a mental health professional in your school setting. That's a good place to start, mm-hmm. because they might have referrals if they don't have on-site mental health professionals. That's different from the school guidance counselor. And also with your physician, they might have referrals for mental health professionals, and they can refer you to somebody. And Lutheran Family also has a regular counseling department also.
So seeking out help wherever it can be found. Obviously, if Lutheran Family and Child Services or Children's Services has a resource available at the school where your child attends, then that's that would be one of the easiest connections to make. What about resources? What can I, if I or a family member are showing some signs, what are some resources that maybe some books or things mm-hmm. that I can look to guide me in how to be helpful?
There is a lot of resources available to parents, which is a good thing. Now you might have to, they might not be at your local bookstore, but if you go online now, there's so many places on Amazon. I like to suggest for anxiety, a good book for parents is called The Worried Child, and it's by Paul Foxman. And it's a good practical book that kind of helps parents on what are some things I can do to help my child if they're dealing with different types of worry, whether it be academic or social. And there's a lot of good children's books. So there's a good workbook that we use with kids. There's storybooks. The workbook might, when you worry too much, and it just has good worksheets and things. There's a children's book called Wilma Jean and the Worry Machine. So it helps kids to know, you know, they're not alone when they face some of these worries that seem to be overwhelming for them, even at school. And then some good books I've often recommended on depression would be The Feeling Good Book by David Burns, and he's a psychiatrist. And there's just great, these are practical books, so there's a lot of ideas in there on what you can do to mm-hmm. help with depression. And they're very user-friendly.
and that's important today, you know, with as we were talking about earlier, families being on the run and not necessarily being professionals in that field. Mm-hmm. As a parent, we want things that are easy to use, things that are easy to pick up and use. So that's helpful.
David Burns talks, he's very good about, he's written several books, so he tries to keep current on medications and, you know, gives you pros and cons on what he's seen with, you know, so that's helpful for someone, you know, thinking about that, or it's been recommended for the first time. And we have so many that we can select from.
And I'm sure as a parent, the thought of, if you're talking with a mental health professional and they introduce the idea of medication, that can be very overwhelming as a parent to think about giving my child medication, you know, regardless of how you view mm-hmm. Medication for anxiety and depression, just the thought of introducing medicine, you know, some parents might be relieved. Okay, great. We've got some medicine that there's a medicine that can really take care of this.
Yes.
And some parents might instantly think, oh, great, this is a cure.
Mm-hmm.
To the other extreme that I'm not so sure I really want to give my kids medicine, chemicals, medicines, right. Specifically for mental health issues. I'd rather try some other options first. Go ahead.
When you think about anxiety and depression in particular, those, when we, There are quite a few medications that are safe for children now, and they are constantly researching and coming up. But there is not as much. The research is just beginning as far as anecdotal. And, you know, using children in studies is not as easily done, of course. And, but with anxiety and depression, those are usually temporary. Whereas if you have been diagnosed with ADHD, it's more of a lifelong commitment to medication, where anxiety, it might be something you struggle with, but we do have more. We know the best combination is counseling and medication sometimes for those more serious cases that people are dealing with. But the medication can be something that helps you actually do some of these coping techniques that they're learning. Mm-hmm. So it might help you be able to exercise. It might help you be able to, you don't have to feel like it's something you might be doing for a lifetime.
It could be an interim to help open those windows of opportunity for, mm-hmm. for exercise, as you said, other habits that we talked about earlier, those habits that are good, but are hard to get into once you're in that thought pattern. So medicines might be able to open up a door. Obviously, every individual is different, so we're not making a prescription for any specific, as a disclaimer, we're not prescribing anything for anyone today. Every individual is different and certainly should seek help from a mental health professional.
Right, and a psychiatrist is the one trained in all of, you know, they're going to be the well-trained physicians on the medicines that are available for mental health diagnosis.
But the opportunities that those medicines can provide for some individuals, depending on their situation, may open up doors for them to be able to learn habits or to take on new habits that could be healthy.
We get worried about kids who, they aren't sleeping for several times during the week and they're not eating well. That's when it can get serious and start to go downward. Those are some of the things that we're looking at in conjunction with all the other, maybe isolated and loss of motivation.
And that brings us to a good question. What could happen if anxiety or depression is left untreated?
We see isolation a lot, and avoidance. We talk about, you know, they're trying to cope on their own. So they're feeling temporarily better by avoiding or by isolating from certain situations. They might feel less stressed, less anxious in the moment. But over time, we know we're created as people to live amongst each other and to be. That's the healthiest way to. We need support from, and it might not be a lot of people, but. So that's, it goes, then your health can go down from there. And we get worried about, you know, you're feeling, then your thought patterns get stuck again and you're feeling hopeless and not a desire to move on to the next day. And with anxiety, you get more panic attacks, let's say, if those are the things that affect you physically, or sometimes with anxiety, you're feeling more stress in your body, like sickness, and that just tends to get worse if you're not stepping out and trying to work, so, to get healthy.
So left untreated or left unattended or uncared for, these things that these outward signs of anxiety or depression, if left untreated. It, without getting to the root of the matter, really could lead to more outward signs and more not just emotional or mental problems, but also physical health as well, it sounds like.
Yes.
As you mentioned, panic attacks and just overall physical health, you're not motivated to exercise, not motivated to eat well, not sleeping well, all those things I could imagine would really... would be very demanding on your physical health and could create some probably serious problems down the road that could be life-threatening, I would imagine. So maintaining good mental health is a good thing.
Yes.
And practicing these things early on, practicing good habits early on in life that'll last us a whole lifetime are certainly valuable. We talked about communication in the family being important, communication with those beyond the family as well, especially for our loved ones who are maybe in their living in somewhat seems like an isolated situation, maybe in a retirement community or something like that. They're not necessarily living in close proximity with family. So getting to know others in their community, in their, whether it be a nursing home, retirement community, or maybe just in their neighborhood, there might be someone who's living at home with home health care and really feeling isolated. Maintaining relationships it sounds like that's really key to maintaining good health, even if it's someone who tends to be somewhat what we might consider introverted, still having just one-on-one conversations. They don't have to be group conversations, yes, per se, just right. Having those one-on-one conversations. Any other thoughts any other advice for us today as we're thinking about what we can do to maintain good mental health when we're thinking about children, teens, older adults, any of those groups, that anything else that you wanted to talk about on those in terms of maintaining good mental health?
I think just taking time to have positive interactions. We had talked about, being able to talk to your kids maybe at a family meal, but also taking time to have a family night or, just one-on-one time with each of your children.
Mm-hmm.
We know every family's busy, whatever your family makeup might be, but to make sure you have one-on-one time with each child and also that group time, that family, this is an important structure here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you go when you are having stressful situations, but they're going to do that more if it's already established that we have to have this time together, because there's so many influences that our children are exposed to with our mass media and electronic systems, which have great benefits, but also you really have to be purposeful as families to make sure your influence is major. As I said, they will be listening.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take the time to...
You're right. There are
devotions and
there are so many things that demand not only for our time but also for our attention, and things that quite often will attempt to take the place of that network that the family provides, that network of support that family provides. There are plenty of other things, and we could get into another whole week,
yes,
of programs about, mm-hmm, that topic alone. All the things that could. That vie for our time and our attention that take the place. And that's where the family really starts to break down, is when we start giving more attention to those than building those healthy relationships at home. Well, I really appreciate your time today in answering these questions for us, answering my questions, as we talk about mental health and wellness and health and wellness this week here on Faith and Family. It's been a pleasure talking with you today. I feel like I've learned
a lot. Thank you.
And got some great ideas too, as our family is growing and expanding. I feel like I've gotten some good ideas that'll help us keep our family healthy, especially mentally healthy, establishing I think what I'm taking away from the conversation today is establishing those patterns early on for healthy communication in the family is really the key to good mental health for families. So thanks so much for spending time today with us, Cheryl, from Lutheran Family and Children's Services here in Missouri.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Stick around. We've got more topics coming up later on this week on Faith and Family. As tomorrow, we'll talk about parish nursing and also LCMS Mercy, Medical Mercy mission teams, and as well as the importance of family meals. Lots of great topics here on Faith and Family this week. Stick around. Moments of Assurance up next right here on Worldwide KFUO. Oh.